Welcome to the Intentional Encourager podcast, where each episode brings you compelling conversations and stories designed to entertain, enlighten, and encourage. And now here's your host, Brian Sexton.
And welcome into the Intentional Encourager podcast. I'm your host, Brian Sexton. Thank you for joining us again today. I have got a guy that's a chief customer officer. Now, I love that because, again, a lot of companies now are trying to figure this out. How do we connect with customers better? How do we encourage customers better? But here's what I love about what Mario talks about. He talks about confidence. He talks about leadership. And we're going to dive into a lot of those things today. All those things promote intentional encouragement. And so it's my honor to welcome to the Intentional Encourager podcast, my friend Mario McCracken. Mario, how are you this morning?
Oh, great. Thank you. Happy to be here. I feel honored. Thank you, Brian.
Man, the honor is mine. And people say, well, I feel honored to be on your... I'm like, why? The honor is mine, man. To get to talk to great people like yourself is an honor for me. And to bring you to this audience is an honor as well. So the honor is mine, my friend. Let's start here. And I've been asking this question, Mario. I can't remember the episode that I started asking this question, but it's become a staple and a hallmark of the Intentional Encourager podcast. And that is this: everyone's experiences in life, in business, personally, professionally, spiritually, have differed the last 18 to 20 months as we continue to navigate through these unusual times. And I said this, I've said this on several podcasts, and I'll say this again. For my son, who's 21, COVID-19 will be their 9/11. For me, that was the life-altering, defining moment of my lifetime. I've never seen anything like that. Take me through the last 18 to 20 months in your world, professionally, personally. What lessons have you learned, and what things will you take from this time that you'll use going forward for the next 10, 15 years, or maybe even the rest of your life?
That's a great question. So I think for a lot of people, everything slowed down, right? And when things are slow, you can't hide behind excuses. You can't hide behind being busy as much just because you have more time to do things. Like in my business, things slowed down quite a bit where people weren't making decisions. So we were still working hard, but we weren't advancing new sales as much because our business, it's large, complex mega deals where it's a 2 to 3 year sales cycle anyway. So now I was making that 2 year sales cycle, a 4 year sales cycle, right? And it was just making things really, and in my family life, slowing down meant I was home a ton more than I was used to. And so anytime you slow down, you have the ability, if you take it, to look at the situation, evaluate, create awareness, and kind of decide what you want to do from there. And so while things were obviously hard in lots of different levels for many people, I think slowing down allowed me specifically to look at things in a brand new way and to pay attention to things I never paid attention to before, such as processes in my business or how was I actually building relationship with my wife and kids and those kind of things. So slowing down was, I think, one of the biggest blessings that came out of COVID.
Man, I've got to ask you, you said something very interesting. And I think a lot of people that would hear our conversation today would say, and especially in the sales game, a game I know very well from spending a lot of years there. Mario, you have a 2 to 3 year sales cycle. Now that went out to 4 years. How do you keep yourself and your salespeople encouraged through a sales cycle that can be a lot of movements, a lot of giving, and a lot of, and I'll use the planting term, a lot of watering, planting, fertilizing to reap? And it reminds me, Mario, forgive me for the long-winded question here. It reminds me, my pastor was preaching a message one Sunday about the bamboo tree that grows over in Asia. Once that seed is planted, it has to be watered. It has to be nurtured. It has to be cared for. But nothing happens for 3 to 5 years but it still, if you miss a watering, if you miss a planting, it could be detrimental and that seed cannot flourish. But literally in a year, that seed explodes from the ground and begins to grow to about 80 feet. How do you keep yourself and your team encouraged through watering and planting through a long sale season and waiting for that moment for that deal to explode?
Yeah, that's super hard. That's a great question. And it's the opposite of instant gratification, right? Because in lots of sales, you're like, you're going, and you close a deal, you feel good. It gives you motivation to keep going. You get inspired to keep going. And, but it's more about courage. So when you talk about encouragement, courage is the act of doing in spite of whatever obstacle, fear, grief, pain, or whatever's in your way, sadness, hurt, all of those kind of things, or dissatisfaction. And so when you have courage, it's all about that action. And if you take the right action, sometimes you wish you had different rewards. And so I think it's putting the focus on the doing rather than the result for the long term. And short term, you care about the doing. Long term, you do care about the result. But I really think it's about switching your focus. And if as a leader, you can help other people switch their focus to the more of the doing, and the more you do, the more courage you get, then you're helping them create their own courage. And that's, for me, at least that's how it is. You have to focus on the doing rather than the result for tomorrow.
I love what you said there about focusing on the doing and switching the focus. And Mario, I've got to ask you, behind your right shoulder, I see a book that says Really Care for Them.
Yeah, that's my book.
And that is such a concept that here's what I saw, and I'm not trying to get political with this question, but it's really taking my focus there, is that we saw a lot of people that had the worst of their emotions come out in the last 18 to 20 months, but I also saw people that had the best of their emotions come out. We saw companies that didn't treat their people well, and we saw companies that went over and above treating their people the way they should. And I love what you said. And I believe it's this. It was that focus switch, I believe, that happened negatively for some companies that said, hey, we need more revenues are down. So what are you guys going to do to pick it up? Because maybe they hadn't been focus switched like that before. Maybe everything was good and they just kind of rode the wave. And there were companies that said, what can we do for you? How can we make you more productive working remotely? Is this something you guys would embrace if we gave you the freedom and the opportunity to work remotely from home? Flipping that focus to being in office based, to allowing their employees the creativity and the freedom to do what they need to do. How important to you is the correct care of your people? And the correct care of people, not only that you serve internally, but those that you serve externally?
I don't think anything is more important, actually. I think it's the most important part of business is caring for the people you work with. And that could be internal colleagues, right? That could be your customers. That could be external vendors. As long as you put their needs as equal to your own needs, then everything turns out so much better. You never want to place their needs above your needs, because then you're going to hurt yourself or your family or your company. But yeah, you place their needs equal to your needs and everybody wins.
Well, and again, Mario, I love what you said there. There's a lot of times that we as a society have found winning and losing to be absolute. And I love what you said there. Let's dive a little bit deeper there, because I love where you're taking us in this conversation. We feel like in this society that, and I'll use this as an example, a lot of people love to brag about the deal that they got. Maybe, you know, they bought a new car. Man, I got such a great deal. Yeah. Or, you know, man, I like that. Hey, Mario, man, I love those headphones. Dude, Brian, you cannot believe the deal I got on these headphones, man. I mean, I lucked out, right? Or that dream vacation. We always feel like it's I won and somebody lost because I got something that somebody else didn't, or I had an outcome that somebody else didn't have. And I love what you talked about with an everybody wins mentality. So if I'm a business owner, and I want to speak to you business owners out there for just a minute. I want Mario to speak. No, I'm not going to speak to you. I want Mario to speak to you. How do you create that everybody wins culture where everybody truly feels like a winner? And but not only feels like, but believes that their company does things well enough that everyone wins in the process.
Yeah, it's hard to focus on that everybody wins when you're so focused on the short term, right? Like if you're just trying to stay above water, it's hard to swim fast. But the point is, once you get to a point where you're, okay, you're floating, you're doing well, then you can start swimming. And I think what that means is, of course, you have to have a solid foundation, a base in a business, and you have to take care of all the basics of being smart with your money, hiring the right people, all those foundational basics. But once that's in place, the real foundation and the real growth comes when you actually start listening to your clients and your future clients. And it's not just listening so you can sell them something. It's listening so you actually can understand them. And so while I technically don't believe you can ever find 100% true empathy, because you never can know exactly what someone else is going through, it's the pursuit of empathy that makes it all worthwhile and that makes it happen. It's the trying to understand someone and trying to listen to them and trying to get where they're coming from enables you to then really scale your business. Because once you really know what someone needs and wants, you can do whatever you can to give it to them. And then you're always going to find a way to win.
Man, I love that. I got to stay here for just a minute. The internal gnawing, that invisible listener that I was telling you about before we started recording. I love what you said about the pursuit of empathy. Because in sales, and I've seen this for well over 25 years, is that empathy has been taught. And I talked about it in my book, People Buy from People.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to, you know, well, you have to be empathetic. Well, you know,
for sure.
You've got to put your, but Mario, you hit on something that is really profound in the pursuit of empathy. And that is the navigation that you have to get to find the thing that you have in common that really allows you to put yourself in that person's shoes, to really find true empathy, because it doesn't just happen. And I love what you talked about, the pursuit of empathy. What's one thing in the pursuit of empathy that people fail to do? Salespeople, business owners, what's the one thing you found that people fail to do in the pursuit of empathy?
I think most people fail to not make quick judgments. I think once we think we understand what they're going through, so let's say I grew up in a certain situation and I had to work a job outside the home at age 11, right? So let's just say I meet someone else that had the same, technically the same experience. So I said, oh, you worked outside the home at age 11 as well. So my automatic judgment is we're the same and we had the same experiences, but that might be super far from the truth. And so me making a quick judgment based off of superficial facts could down the road hurt the relationship. And they might have worked outside the home because they had to, whereas I worked outside the home because I wanted to. And
yeah,
who knows what happens, or vice versa, right? And so there could be so many different variables that those quick judgments hurt future relationships. And so I think if we stop making quick judgments, it allows space for us to try to pursue that empathy.
Yeah. And the reason that I mentioned that is, and with that answer, Mario, you got me thinking about Mark Cuban. I respect Mark Cuban and his business acumen. Mark Cuban owns the NBA's Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
He's on Shark Tank. Cuban talks about being 11 years old and selling trash bags door to door. Now, Mark Cuban also talks about his childhood growing up outside of Pittsburgh, where his dad was a car detailer. He said, my dad worked his tail off. And Cuban, you know, he and his brother grew up in a family of, hey, if you know, dad doesn't have a lot of extra. Mom and dad don't have a lot of extra. If I want something, I've got to go hustle for it. To your point about the reasons of working at 11, maybe some people were just like, look, I just wanted to go make money. I have a friend of mine. His brother was like that. He said, my brother started selling candy in grade school because he figured out a way to make money. He just wanted to make money. And so he just started buying candy and bringing it to school and selling it to kids. And so again, you're right. Everybody's situation is different. Maybe, you know, and I think about my own father. You know, my dad's dad died when he was four. So my dad had to start working at 15 or 16 years old just to help out at the house, you know, because they didn't have, you know, he had two older sisters. They had to do things to help their mom because it was survival, right? I mean, so you're 100% right. We could park here all day, but I want to take a quick break because I want to, in the next segment we come back, I want to talk about confidence. And man, I love where this is going and this conversation's going. We're just going to build right on top of that. My guest, Mario McCracken, sales guru, chief customer officer. This is a guy you want to get connected to if you want to connect to customers better. Mario McCracken, my guest. Come right back here with us on the Intentional Encourager podcast in just a moment. Hey everybody, Brian Sexton here. I want to tell you about our sponsor, SEO National. SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. Now, what's that, you might say? Well, search engine optimization helps you show up higher on search engines in front of paying customers for words that you as a business owner can monetize. What a great concept. SEO National is owned by my good buddy Damon Burton, who's been a guest here on the Intentional Encourager podcast. Not only has Damon and his team worked with businesses of all sizes, from e-commerce startups to NBA teams and Shark Tank featured businesses, but more importantly, Damon and his team are about transparency, trust, and providing lifetime value. So much so that he still has his first customers after opening SEO National 14 years ago. Let me give you some intentional encouragement and call Damon and his team today at 855-736-6285 or go to www.seonational.com and get a free quote. Mario, I want to hit on what we've talked about here. You were talking about before the break the failure of making quick judgments. And I think that stems a lot from overconfidence, like you talked about before we took a break. I feel like from one sentence that you told me that we have alignment where it maybe is a false sense of confidence. And I have stepped into those situations myself. When you think about confidence, what's the one synonym of confidence that people forget about? A lot of times the relative word that goes right alongside confidence. If you have confidence, you need to have this alongside it.
Oh shoot. That's a tough one. What you should have is humility, but what often it turns into is arrogance, instead. But how I like to define, and so I might be going off on a different topic here.
No, you go wherever you want to go. That's why I wanted to tap into your expertise on this. You go wherever you want to go.
So how I like to picture, and after reading tons of books on confidence and courage and self-esteem, they're all closely related. But if you say I am, and then how you define yourself is self-esteem. I can means what you believe you're able to accomplish is your confidence. And I do is what you actually do is your courage. And so I am is self-esteem. I can is confidence. And I do is courage. And that just helps me understand, okay, what do I really believe about this situation? That's my confidence. Do I believe I'm going to do a good job? Do I believe I can help this person? Do I believe I understand this person? And overconfidence is a big problem because if you don't know enough, but you think you do, then you'll step in it. You'll get over your head. You'll start saying things that aren't necessarily helpful. You'll start doing things that might not be helpful to that person or their situation. And the reverse is also true, where if you don't have enough confidence, you think, oh, I can't help. I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not tall enough, whatever it is. And then that affects your ability to be successful as well. So finding that balance of what you believe about yourself, coupled with humility of always trying to learn more, I think is that sweet spot that's hard to find.
Well, and again, I think you're 100% right there, Mario, is a lot of times, and I loved it, and what I wrote down that I'm going to put in the show notes is the three power statements. I can, I am, I do, right? And those are all pieces of intentional encouragement. Those are all things that demonstrate encouragement. Because the inverse of that is I can't, I'm not, I don't. Right? So the inverse of that is allowing those negative influencers to have a space and a place inside of you. And I love what you said there. Out of those three power statements, what is the most powerful to you in your life?
So I think it's a cycle where they all can feed off each other. But for me personally, I think courage feeds the other two more than the other way around for me personally. So the more I do, then the more confidence and self-esteem I create. But it's a circle. So some people might have it be the more they believe about themselves, the I am, the more that they get confidence and courage. So it just depends. Like you could put it on a spin wheel and just spin it around and they feed off each other. But for me, I think the action helps me find the other two.
Man, that is awesome. And I love that. Listen, I have always, Mario, I've always said this. People ask me in my life, they'll say, hey, you know, how is it that you can do this? How can you do that? How do you do a podcast? How do you get on live radio and talk? And here's what I say, and I love where we're going here. When I was a kid and a teenager, my dad put those power statements in me. You can, you are, you do. My dad built incredible confidence in me. And I told somebody one time, I said, my dad put me in uncomfortable situations where it was shoving me out into the water. You mentioned swimming. It's hard to swim fast when you're trying to keep your head above water. My dad put me in those situations where it was like, I'm going to shove you out into the pool. Once you get to the surface, then you're going to start swimming fast. You know, just don't panic. Nice. You're going to come to the surface, then start swimming. And it built incredible confidence in me to where I felt like, it's like, okay, this isn't a big deal. This isn't a big circumstance. Do you find, and maybe it's in yourself or people that you admire or follow, things like that, what is the root cause? Is it courage that, let me ask it this way. Is courage the root cause of their confidence? Or is it courage and a mixture of other things that come together in that wheel you were talking about, that spin cycle? But ultimately, is courage the root cause of confidence?
Ultimately, I think it is. Yeah. I think it is ultimately. And people find it in different ways, though. So some people have to find it on their own. And so maybe that's where that confidence comes, is from the act of doing, whereas other people might have had somebody in their life to support them and help them feel that confidence and help them believe of what they're able to accomplish. And then that inspires them to take action and to find that courage. So, but ultimately, without courage, nothing else matters. Self-esteem and confidence don't actually matter if you don't take action, because you can believe anything you want, but it doesn't mean anything unless there's action behind it. And that's in any job. That's in your personal life, your religious life, your professional life, your relationships with your family. Whatever you think in your head, if it doesn't come out in physical form, it's not real until it comes out in physical form. And that's where that courage takes it. It's doing the right thing in the face of fear, grief, or pain. And that's what that courage is.
How does a business owner or a sales or a VP of sales or somebody that's in a leadership position, maybe they own a small business. And here's where I'm going with this, Mario. Is there are people out there that have had their boats rocked in the last 18 to 20 months. It could be a restaurant owner that catches us and they go, man, you know, my suppliers have raised my prices. My deliveries are jacked up. You know, I've had to portion off, you know, I used to be able to seat 100 people. I only seat 75 because I've got staffing issues. I've really had to struggle to keep my business, to my sales numbers, to where they need to be. Walk me through the courage it takes to do different things in your business. This is where I'm thinking in this conversation. Yeah.
No, that's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. The floor is yours, my man.
So that actually brought up a perfect memory from this past 24 months. I have a friend. It's actually my favorite restaurant in the town where I live in Boise, Idaho. It's called
Love Boise. Other than other than the blue turf on other than the Smurf turf, I love Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, that Smurf turf brings back a lot of good memories. Back when I was in high school, the city owned half the stadium. And so Friday nights was always two high school football games back to back. And
at Boise Stadium.
Yeah. And so we always had our home football. There was four high schools in Boise and we always had four games.
How cool is that? Listen, let's park that question I asked you for just a minute. How cool was it to have that experience? Because, and I've said this about Marshall. I went to Marshall. Marshall and Boise have played each other.
Yeah, 94, 93.
That's the first time we played. That's the first time we played
Boise. Randy Moss came to Boise. I saw that in 93. I was in sixth grade when I think I was in sixth grade, the fall of sixth grade when Randy Moss came to Boise.
Greatest college receiver in the history of it was fun
that was
watching.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing that I've always said. We've got multiple high schools in our area within 20 minutes of Marshall on either side of the river. So if you go to Kentucky, you know, there are three or four high schools within 20 to 30 minutes of Marshall.
Yeah.
If you go across the river to Ohio, there's six or seven schools within that range. And in you have Huntington High School, you have Cabell Midland in the town that I live in. I don't understand why Marshall hasn't done that same thing on Friday night, even for a season opener, do a fall kickoff. Where you take four of the teams, maybe you take two West Virginia teams, an Ohio team, and a Kentucky team, and you play them.
Yeah.
You know, like that. Forgive me for going off on a tangent. I love that. And my hat's off to the city of Boise because it gives you a big – I mean, man, you were in their locker room. You were in the visiting lot. You got surrounded by first-class facilities as a high school kid.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And so Boise – has grown a ton since then, but this was the late 90s and there was only four public high schools. And so that was the home field for all four public high schools. So two of them always had a home game every Friday night. So it's pretty awesome to play there. But then once Boise State got good and then started getting ESPN contracts, they bought out the city. And so now they don't do that anymore. They were able to purchase it back and now they play a lot of their games on Friday and Thursday nights. But yeah, I remember playing a lot of football games at that field when I was in high school. It was a pretty special experience for sure.
Man, we'll dive into that here in just a little bit. But I want to go back to the question we were talking about and we'll take a break and we'll get into your story. But Mario, I feel like there have been a lot of businesses and let's reset that question. Let's tee that back up for the listeners. Yeah. The courage that people have had to take when they've taken shots. This is a perfect way. We use a football analogy. A quarterback that keeps taking shots in the pocket, it takes courage for them to stand in there and take the hit. And that's what a lot of business owners have tried to do in the last 18 to 20 months. In keeping their bit and moving the ball down the field from a sales perspective is they've had to stand in the pocket and take some real hits. Yeah. And a lot of times when you're watching football, you'll see that quarterback the first couple of times that they've taken hits, they get a little gunshot. The ball comes out a little faster. So they miss a wide open receiver because they're just trying to get it out so they don't get rocked.
Yeah.
You know, they're moving, their feet are skittish. It reminds me of a couple weeks ago. Forgive me for the long-winded question. I noticed something. I watched my Cincinnati Bengals play the Baltimore Ravens, and they just destroyed Baltimore. And in the second half of that game, Lamar Jackson, who runs a lot anyway, Lamar Jackson was taken off out of the pocket quicker because he felt the rush from Cincinnati's defensive line coming faster, and it forced him to run sooner than he wanted to. Or it was like, I got to move. And his throws were way off target. They were forcing him into uncomfortable situations, but it was causing negative outcomes. So how does that business owner have the courage to stand in there and take those shots from a business perspective and keep their eyes downfield? And am I making sense with that question, Mario?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So that restaurant I brought up, Barbecue for Life, they had huge supply chain issues. They had to shut down for a few months. Everything was going wrong. And then when they reopened, they couldn't get the same products that they had. So they were known for having a few certain barbecue items, and they couldn't even get the material to make them, the raw ingredients. And so they had to change from a full barbecue shop to a sandwich shop. And that took a lot of courage to say, hey, we're switching up our menu. We're going to become a sandwich shop. But what it did was, as they evolved and as business came back to normal, the sandwiches were such a big hit. They were able to open a second restaurant just a couple months ago across town that just was sandwiches. So now they have a barbecue restaurant and a sandwich restaurant. And while they almost lost the whole business entirely, because they had the courage to change their menu, which lots of restaurant owners aren't, because they believe in their menu. This is what they built their business and their success off. Yeah. They were willing to adapt, adjust. And that takes courage. And so I'm really proud of those restaurant owners, Brad and Brianna, and they were able to really just switch their business model for a temporary time, and it worked. And that takes courage.
Yeah. Well, and Mario, that's encouragement for somebody listening out there that has felt like that they've gone against their core principles. You know, Brad and Brianna were barbecue people. That's what they wanted to do. That's why you open a barbecue restaurant. Is you're purposeful that you can say, hey, we can do barbecue better in the Boise area. We can serve customers looking for what we have and create that market in demand. It takes courage. And I love what you said there. It's either expanding your thought process or, man, we're a pizza shop. We're only a pizza shop. These recipes have been in my family for 8 generations, and this is what we're going to do. And what they do is they take that business to the grave, literally, because it dies, because there's no iteration. There's no. Exactly. And so, business owner, sales leader, listen to what Mario just said and have the courage to expand what you do and how you serve people. And this, they took, man, that's the perfect situation. And it's, again, I'll bring the football analogy into it. It's turning disaster. It's taking a possibly negative play. It's like that guy that gets caught in the backfield, 3 or 4 yards in the backfield, and all of a sudden he just makes a move and says, okay, I'm going to try to slip here. And all of a sudden, man, he just slips out and he's gone. He takes it to the house. And that's what Brad and Brianna did. They took that negative play and they took it to the house. My hat's off to Brad and Brianna. I hope you guys are listening to this. Mad respect here from folks in West Virginia. You guys for turning that negative into a positive. Let's step aside, take a break, because Mario alluded to a little bit of what he did in his life. I want to save room and space for Mario to tell his story. This episode has been full. I mean, it's been chocked full of intentional encouragement. But hang on, we got more coming. My guest, my friend Mario McCracken, joining me on the Intentional Encourager podcast, back in just a moment.
Hey everybody, Brian Sexton here. We are in the season of gift giving. Everywhere you go, whether you go to a store, you go online, the gifts are out to be gotten. I've got a gift idea for you I think you're going to love. It's my book, People Buy From People. 10 powerful people lessons from the ultimate people person, my dad. If you know someone that would love to be a better connector, or you want to help them get there, People Buy From People is for them. Leaders, if you've got teams that you want to connect better, deeper, powerful, both internally and externally, People Buy From People is for them. If you want to connect like you've never connected before, pick up a copy of People Buy From People. You might say, Brian, where do I get a copy? Very simple. Go to Amazon.com, search People Buy From People, Brian Sexton. You'll find it right there. There's also a Kindle version available and an Audible version read by me. Let me give you some intentional encouragement and go today, get your copy, People Buy From People. I promise you, you won't regret it. And now let's get back to more great conversation here on the Intentional Encourage podcast.
Thank Mario, let's dive into your story, man. You alluded to it, you know, growing up in the Boise area and play. Yeah. So listen, man, I want to give you the floor. I may jump in with a question or two, but go back as far as you want to and kind of tell your story, some things you've overcome in your life, lessons you've learned from it, man, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so Boise is like a great place, right? And I live here now on purpose when my whole life I tried to get out, right? Like it was where I was forced to be because this is where I grew up. But then once I lived in, after I left Boise, I lived in New York, I've lived in London, I've lived in Hong Kong, I've lived in Arizona, Texas, Louisiana, San Diego, California, I lived in a lot of different places. And I decided to come back just because I realized how good it was. But my life was built, I realized what my life was built to do was to find a way to help other people. And so when I was a little kid, my dad decided to, he wasn't going to really be as full part of our lives anymore. And so he left out and my mom had six of us to raise. I was the second oldest. And so when I was six, we were kind of on our own after that. And that's when I learned the value of teamwork. And I think that's why I've always gravitated toward leadership and understanding how teams work together and why I love team sports so much growing up, why team sports were always my thing. I didn't do anything individual sports until actually this year when I started jiu-jitsu, but my whole life I was always in team sports because I think growing up with my mom and the six kids, we really had to be a team. And I think with a team, you can overcome any problem. And with a team, you can find that courage you need. And so that's those experiences then when I transitioned into professional life.
I got to jump in here and ask you something. You're the second oldest of six kids.
Yeah.
Your dad decides to bail. How did that shape and define you? And looking back, how has it helped you? You mentioned your wife and children.
Yeah.
Has that shaped the way that you are a present husband and father today, looking back on those circumstances of your childhood?
For sure, yeah. And I think I have a lot of work to do on that front, but it taught me what not to do, right? And so as long as I've said, oh, as long as I'm there, then that's better than not being there, right? And so, but I had to overcome that shift of just being there and be more active and present. And that's something I work on every day. But I did learn, you can learn from every situation. You can either learn what to do or what not to do. And so it just depends on how you take it, right? And so, yeah, that experience, lots of how my mom taught me to work hard and sacrifice everything for the people you love and those kind of things, that taught me what to do. And then the other side of it was, hey, if you care about someone, you want to be in their life, show up, right? And so that's kind of the two sides of it.
No, and I forgive me for jumping in there because I've had people on the podcast that have said, you know, they had an absent father in their lives or their dad left. And it's like, man, it took me a long time to overcome that. It took me, you know, it affected me in relationships going forward. I'm always curious how it affects someone in that way. And I loved what you said about the value of teamwork, where your mom really just stepped in and said, okay, this is the hand we're dealt, but this is not the hand we're going to play. And that's, you know, Mario, you may have said it without saying it, but that's the way I took it, is a lot of people are dealt a hand and they go, oh, crap, what am I going to do with this? And instead of going, okay, at least I got something to play. At least I've got something in my hand I can play and I can make an impact with. As you progressed in your adolescent years, teenage years, things like that, you learned the value of teamwork. How were you able to channel that in some different areas in your life?
So I think it was something that was hard for me to channel it outside of my family at first. So growing up, I think because I was so close and could rely on my family so much, most of my life, I didn't have very many friends. And I think it was because I didn't believe or have confidence in myself, right? And then there was an experience I had where I lived my whole life until the summer after my junior year of high school in Boise, Idaho. My mom got a full-time teaching job though in Arizona. And so that summer, like 10 days before school started for my senior year, we got in our little Geo Metro the seven of us somehow fit in a Geo Metro and a U-Haul. And we drove down to Yuma, Arizona. And that's like a long drive, 16 hour drive. And we moved to Yuma 10 days before school started. And on that drive, I was thinking to myself, you know what? I didn't have any real friends in Boise. Like I had one or two friends that would consider friends, but I didn't feel welcome at school. I didn't feel like I was part of the team. Even though I was on the basketball team, I was on the football team. I never felt connected. And I felt like I was kind of a loser. Then when I got to, on that drive, that 16 hour drive, I was thinking, you know what? Nobody there knows me. I can be whoever I want to be. And it totally changed everything. And so when I got to Yuma, I was actually a different person, and I was able to pretend I feel like I had confidence, which maybe I was pretending I had confidence, but I deep down I felt it. So it didn't feel like pretending, but however it happened, I became a different person in Yuma, and I had a totally different senior year experience than I had the rest of my life. And then I parlayed that into in college. I was like, nobody in college knows me. I can be what I want. Then when I got to professional life, every time I would meet a new potential customer, I'm like, they don't know me. I can show them who I really am without having them prejudge me based on who they thought I was last school year or last year or the year before. And I think just that idea of you tell people who you are through your actions and words, then allow them to make a judgment can change everything. You don't have to listen to what you used to believe about yourself. You can tell yourself a new story today, and that story becomes your personal truth. And so whatever you tell yourself, you believe. And I think that move to Yuma really helped me figure that out.
Man, I love that. And I was just jotting a ton of notes down here, the story you tell yourself. Because a lot of people would say, oh man, how unfair is that? You don't get to finish high school where you grew up and things like that. Man, 10 days before your senior year, you move. But it's amazing the providence that actually came from that situation of that was actually perfect timing for you. And the way you were able to handle that, the timing of that situation couldn't have been better, because the timing was, they don't know me. I can be the guy that I can be. When you think about that, what is the greatest lesson that you learned from that experience? You know, you talked about, man, the story that you tell yourself, but was there something else that you took from that shaped the rest of your life?
When you stop being self-centered, and you can still be focus on yourself without being self-centered. And I think that helped me adjust. And I think feeling sad for myself is what caused me to feel more sad, I think, guess growing up, right? But then once I decided that, hey, I don't actually, if you have the courage to not care what other people think about you, then you can actually have the courage to also care about them. And that's actually started the foundation for the book, Really Care for Them, is if you have the courage to not care about if you're sad or not, but actually care for other people, then you yourself become happier. And I think that's all part of it, where caring for others allows you the space and freedom to care for yourself too.
When you think about the how that, I've got to go here for just a minute. Tell me about the impact of your mom in your life, because your mom, you know, I'm sure, because, you know, I've got a 21-year-old, you're a parent, so we can kind of put ourselves in a little bit in those shoes. I'd have to think, man, that was a really tough decision for your mom to say, I'm going to take this job, this teaching job, and I'm going to move me and my six kids 16 hours away to a place we've never been to before. We don't know anybody there. And, you know, we're just going to make a go of this thing. Just us. What, looking back, what was the greatest lesson that your mom taught you?
I think it's about overcoming adversity without complaint. I think that's the biggest thing, because when you complain about stuff, everything gets worse. And so while life was hard, and while life for her, she had to work multiple jobs all the time, she had to make hard decisions. She's an immigrant from Germany, came to America in her 20s. And then when she had to decide, when the divorce happened, hey, am I going to move all my kids back to Germany, or should I stay in the US? And that was a super hard decision, because she had no family here. Her mom and her sisters and brother and everything, her sister and brother were back in Germany. So she had a support system in Germany, nothing in America. But she decided that, you know, for my six kids, I'm going to stay here, even though that was the hard thing to do, it was the right thing to do. And then the same with moving to Yuma, even though they only lived in Yuma for a year, for the family, it was the right thing to do at the time. And then she came back to Boise with the other little kids when I went off to college. But yeah, it's overcoming adversity without complaint. I think complaint ruins a lot of things. And that's when life is good and you complain, or when life is bad and you complain. Complaining is never good, and it just makes everything worse. And I noticed that from my mom. The times that life was always better and easier for her was when And most of the time she never complained. And that was what I got from it. I'm like, man, her life sucks. And I would always look at my mom as an example and say, hey, if she can do this, then anything I have to do is so much easier because I have a support system. I have a spouse and we have a good relationship and I have a good job and I don't have to worry about all this little stuff that she had to worry about. And I'm like, if she can do that without complaint, imagine me complaining. It's just not right. So I think overcoming adversity without complaint is what I learned from my mother.
Man, that's so good. Take me through the biggest obstacle that you've overcome in your life and the lesson you've learned from it, if you would.
Oh, shoot. I think it's something I'm still overcoming every day, and it's something that I try to hide, but it's, I think, just how I grew up and how I approached emotions. I think I do have an anger issue management problem, and I try to hide it as much as I can, but I think it's something I'm working on every day, and it's something that I have to rein in all situations and at all times. So,
man, I love that. And Mario, here's what I wrote down: approaching emotions correctly. And, you know, not that it's the same thing. I used to get really ticked off when my team would lose a game, whether it was Marshall or the Bengals or the Reds, whatever. I'd throw stuff. I get ticked off. One day, I was like, I didn't sweat for 3 hours. I didn't bleed for 3 hours. I didn't spend 40 hours of my week preparing for this 3-hour event. Why am I getting so off? Why am I getting all torqued off about this?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And so you're right. It is approaching emotions correctly, because there's a lot of times that we could get frustrated about situations. Lord knows in the last 18 to 20 months, we've had a lot of things to get frustrated over.
Yeah.
But we get frustrated, things like that. But man, I love what you said there. And that's something that I need to take more to heart, is approaching my emotions correctly. Let's piggyback off that. And you've been so gracious with your time, Mario. Share with me in this audience your biggest piece of intentional encouragement.
I believe that if you really, really want to help yourself and help others, all it takes is you just think about somebody else for 5 minutes and then figure out a way to go help them. Just for 5 minutes, think about somebody else, go figure out a way to help them, and your life will improve right then and there. It's super simple, and it's never failed me that I feel better after I do that. And once you feel better, then you start making better decisions. And if you make better decisions, your life gets better short-term and long-term. So it has a huge ripple effect. Think about someone for 5 minutes and then go take action.
Man, that is so good. That is so profound, yet so succinct. Think about somebody else for 5 minutes, then go help them. That is so cool. Tell folks how they can connect with you, find your resources. If you're not connected to Mario, and Mario and I are connected on LinkedIn, we've got a lot of mutual friends. But if you're not connected to him, at least on LinkedIn, get connected with him. But tell folks where else they can find you and find your resources.
Yeah, so I'm the only Mario McCracken on LinkedIn. I also have a website, MarioMcCracken.com, where I've published something every single day since January 1st, 2017. I have a new book that just came out, Really Care for Them. So that's pretty exciting to see the journey that go through. But yeah, so Mario McCracken on LinkedIn is probably the best way to reach out.
And where can folks go to Amazon and get that book?
Barnes and Noble, Amazon, Books a Million. Yeah. Indie Books. Yeah. Like any place where you can buy books.
That book's already out now as we record the book's out. Really care for them. That is so good. I'm going to put a link to that on Amazon, where you can go to Amazon and find that. Highly intentionally encourage you to go get Mario's book, Really Care for Them. Mario, man, this has been a blast. I so appreciate you joining me, carving out the time this morning to join me on the Intentional Encourage podcast.
Thank you. Very, very much appreciate it. Thank you, Brian.
My thanks as always to producer Bryce Sexton and technical advisor Matt Mead. And the ultimate thanks goes to the Lord Jesus Christ, who provides intentional encouragement every day through his word. And until next time, remember, everyone, everywhere, anytime, and any place can be an intentional.